It's 7:59. This is KBOO Portland. At 9 o'clock, it's Press Watch with Teresa Mitchell, her weekly look at the news you're not supposed to know. Dennis Bernstein with flashpoints at 10. Between the Covers comes our way at 11, and then at 11:30, it's Words and Pictures. New Yorker cartoonist Emily Flake will share her singular take on politics, parenting, and pop culture with your host, S.W. Konser. And up next, it's Voices from the Edge with guest host Linda Olson Osterlund. Linda will discuss the recent article, MACA, or Making America Crueler Again. The White House targets refugees, green card applicants, and poor immigrants from nationofchange.org. And Linda will take your calls at 503-231-8187. That's next on KBOO.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is also available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Board meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The KBOO Board of Directors meets the fourth Monday of the month, starting at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
KBOO Community Radio is hiring a public affairs director to manage public affairs programming, ensuring that it is of the highest quality and consistent with the KBOO programming charter. For this 32 hours position, we are looking for someone with production experience, experience in community radio, who has communication and training skills, and the ability to work independently in a fast-paced work environment. KBOO Community Radio is an equal opportunity and affirmative action employer. Women and people of color are encouraged to apply. Deadline to apply is Friday, October 25th at 5 p.m. More information can be found at kboo.fm/PADHIRE2019.
Get up, stand up, stand up for your right.
Good morning, and thank you for tuning in to KBOO Community Radio this morning. I'm Linda Olson Osterlund, your host for Voices from the Edge today. I'm really happy to be coming to you today. I came across this article on TomDispatch.com. That's they call themselves a regular antidote to the mainstream media, and they do have a lot of different authors, and they do fairly in-depth essays, and so there's lots and lots to find out at that site. That's TomDispatch.com. The article I'm going to talk about is MACA, or Making America Crueler Again, the White House targets refugees, green card applicants, and poor immigrants. It's written by Arnold Isaacs. He is a longtime writer and critic of our society and its policies. He's a journalist and a Tom Dispatch regular based in Maryland. He's written widely in refugee and immigration issues. He's also the author of From Troubled Lands, Listening to Pakistani and Afghan Americans in Post-9/11 America. And then he also has two books relating to the Vietnam War. His website, if you want to find him, is www.arnoldisaacs.net. His name is spelled ArnoldIsaacs.net. If you're with your computer, you can find this information, I believe, on the homepage under the schedule about this show, Voices for the Edge, under today's schedule. So you can find more information about Tom Isaacs and this article. This article is very important. It's talking about that on September 26, Donald Trump's White House announced that in 2020, refugee admissions to the United States will be limited to 18,000 people. That's drastically lower than our yearly ceiling average, I believe, over the past 40 years. I believe it's been as much as 95,000 along that time. Along with this announcement, the White House released a separate executive order intended to end many years of precedence by giving state and local authorities the power to deny refugee settlement in their jurisdictions. That's right. oh, say a state like Alabama or a state like Florida, a state like Oregon could, under this new plan, say that they were not accepting any refugees to their location and or a city. It says localities. It doesn't even specifically say only states could do this. This is a very, very drastic take on what to do about refugees coming into this country. It would dramatically affect the whole conversation around refugees. It would, as many people say, allow probably a small minority in any locality to turn that locality into a hotbed of xenophobia by opposing just allowing any locals in there. A key provision, I should say, of this plan is to, let me see if I can find it right here. Yeah, a key passage of it, of the settlement, basically says it requires the agencies that do resettlement to make an announcement of any local areas where they are settling people. So it says, shall publicly release any written consents of states and localities to resettlement of refugees. This is a way of it reminds you of what you see when you say, you know, you see people outing somebody who is a sex abuse a perpetrator, a pedophile in a neighborhood, and people announce that they're coming into the neighborhood and people get all up in air and do something about that. Well, they want you to have that kind of situation happening if a refugee moves into your neighborhood, because they want to make sure that it's announced and that everyone knows. You're not required. The state's attorney generals, however, are not required to announce if they turn down refugees for settlement. They're only required to announce if they settled people, if they accepted it. So that's one of the provisions of this new bill. It has much more that's very bad about it, and I want to encourage you to call in today and talk with me about that. The number is 503-231-8187. I'll give you some figures here just to get you started on thinking about what's going on. This new ceiling, the new ceiling that's been put in of 18,000 represents less than one-fifth of the 95,000 yearly cap presidents have set on average since the present refugee law was enacted in 1980. So that's 95,000 was the average. It's now down to 18,000. Actual admissions normally are somewhat lower than the number that's set, so it will probably be lower than that. The actual number of refugees in particular has dropped in a stunning fashion since Donald Trump entered the White House and began his ban. I know that many of us were proud of all the people who showed up at airports and, defended the people coming across who might be banned as they arrived when the first refugee ban started. But we could feel good about our response, but nonetheless, what I want to say to all of you out there, this plan has gone ahead. The keeping of Muslims out has gone ahead, and that has not been stopped by any of this. The country by country report of figures shows that refugee admissions from Iran dropped from 6,327 in 2016 and 2017 to 104 in 2018 and 2019. Similarly, admissions from Iraq, where the waiting list still includes thousands of Iraqis who worked for the U.S. government or military during the American invasion of the country, that fell from 16,000-something to only 308, a 98% drop. For Somalia, the number went from 15,000-something to 284. For Sudan, from 2,438 to 201. And for Syria, from 19,473 to 280. Altogether, the Refugee Council found that the admissions of Muslim refugees had declined by 90% in the Trump era. So we get lots of news that's very disturbing, and we like to still question whether it's appropriate to call the country we live in nationalism, fascism. And I think when you look that we have a nationalist policy, a basic tenet of Nazism and, you know, the kinds of restrictions of fascism is that, you know, my kind of people above all other kind of people, that's one of the basic tenets of it. It is, their Nazi parties are nationalist parties. They want you to believe that somehow some kinds of people are better and more important than others. Well, let's look at what the United States has done now. Is this not the actions of a fascist state? To be able to limit that dramatically, the people coming in from a certain area of the world because of their nationality. And interestingly, it's the areas of the world that we've been destroying where people are fleeing in huge numbers. In Afghan right now, there are over 2.16, I believe, refugees in the world who have left Afghanistan. They're... it's the hugest number ever. We're not letting them into this country, and yet we are still creating that level of displacement from their country. They are right now the most displaced country in the world, people with the largest percentage of their population. So the issues that are happening every day, and the questions are, what can you and I do about it? I know that there is a New York lawsuit against this. An injunction was made so that these changes are not being made immediately. There are many more changes that have been offered here as well related to what kinds of services people can get, and I'll go into those later. But I want to let you guys weigh in. I want to hear your voices this morning. You're important as our audience, as our listener. We need to hear from each other about your thoughts and your opinions about this. Maybe you've worked with refugees. Maybe you work with one of the refugee organizations out there. That's another part of the collateral damage, is that those organizations that work directly in aiding refugees have had such a downturn that they've had to cut back staff and services. Well, you need a certain number of staff and services just to be up and operating and taking care of those who have already come to the country. So it's a very serious setback for all of those agencies and organizations in their ability to take care of people. So we have many of those organizations in the Portland area. If any of you work with those organizations, IRCO or others that I'm not thinking of the names of, please give us a call too and let us know what's happening in your situation. Also, if you're friends with refugees or people who are working here, if not just refugees, immigrants, people who've come here to work and live for a variety of reasons, please give us a call and talk about those kinds of circumstances as well. So let me give you a little bit more of some of the facts about the types of things that are being cut off. One of the things that this new initiative by the Trump administration is they're raising the, quote, public charge barrier. It's a thing that's been part of the law in the past about people being public charge, but this has become something much more important. It'll essentially mean that new hardships for a different category of immigrants who, like resettled refugees, are in the U.S. legally. They're non-citizens seeking the right to legal employment, and in some cases they can be subject to deportation if they can't work. That group, which includes many who are related to or share in households with U.S. citizens, are facing new barriers of a revised public charge rule that was scheduled to take effect this month but has been delayed by judicial rulings in three separate federal district courts. In those orders handed down just 4 days before the October 15th effective date, federal judges in New York and Washington State temporarily blocked the rule nationwide, with a more limited ruling in California stayed, and that one as well works as well as for Maine, Pennsylvania, Oregon, and the District of Columbia, where with plaintiffs in that lawsuit. So we here in Oregon are taking action at that level. There may be other actions in which we need to take it. So, you know, for example, if you are a person applying for a green card to work here legally, that's already a very difficult thing to do. And you need to show the new rule will make it that you need to show that you will not be dependent on public benefits. Its weight would fall on those in the applicant pool who are already the most needy and vulnerable. Women, children, the ill, and the elderly will be disproportionately affected, as will immigrants from poorer countries who are more likely also to belong to racial minorities. These non-citizens that would be denied permanent residence if they were deemed likely to depend on government benefits is a long-standing provision in U.S. immigration law. It's not new under Trump. For many years, though, the public charge label was applied only to those receiving cash assistance through welfare, Social Security, disability payments, or government-funded long institutional care. So, it's been one way, which it only applied to those getting some kind of cash assistance, but now, under the new rules, immigrants seeking a green card or any kind of temporary employment status could be penalized for using or being likely to use a whole long list of other benefits, including food stamps, most Medicaid services, and various housing assistance programs. One of those benefits would automatically disqualify an applicant and would be counted as weighting heavily negative against them. So low income, defined as less than 125% of the federal poverty guideline. I did look up that federal poverty guideline for an individual. 12,000 something is considered the barrier, so it'd be 125% of that. So maybe someone who made as low as 15,000 a year would be heavily weighted negatively against them for getting into the country. Also, their general health and their age. It's actually possible that somebody who's worked here legally and long-term could be sent home for being 61 or older because they're likely to end up using or having a medical condition that would require treatment or institutionalism or long-term work. Women would be at a significant disadvantage because they're more likely to be in the home, especially following childbirth. The Agriculture Department's Special Nutrition Program for Women, Infants, and Children, known as WIC, W-I-C, you often see that. If you're at the grocery store, they'll have a little note under milk products or dairy products, some other products like that, that will say WIC price, and they'll usually be lower priced than non-WIC products. These are intended specifically to keep pregnant and nursing women healthy so that the babies, and when the babies come out, that the babies be healthy so you can get formula through these programs. These programs, if people fear that they can be in them and there's already a huge enrollment drop, all that means is unhealthy kids. All that means is unhealthy parents. What a way to treat people and welcome them to our country, really to treat anybody in our country. Is that the way you want to treat people in our country? I don't think that's the way I want to do. So let's have you guys weigh in on this. I hope you're out there and awake. It's 8:17 in the morning. This is KBOO Portland. I'm Linda Olson-Osterlin with Voices of the Edge, and we're talking about the new changes. We're using an article as a base, a really good article from Tom Dispatch, written by a man named Arnold Isaacs, and the article is called MACA, or Making America Crueler Again. And we're talking about how the White House targets refugees, green card applicants, and poor immigrants in its latest moves and a combination of executive orders and changes to other already existing immigration rules. This is there's so much happening in the world that things can skip by us, but these are very important because it shouldn't skip by us that we're not getting Muslim people into this country anymore. You know, 18,000 altogether thrown across the nation. How many new Muslim people are we getting in this country? Is it really we want to say, oh, that religion, don't come in? people who belong to that religion or people from these countries that the president would like to call S-hole countries. And, you know, the government that made them that way could be called the United States. If you look at the history of the United States bombing and controls of Somalia, we have for the last 20 years at least facilitated keeping Somalia without a stable government. And it's very difficult to live in that country because of all the instability. I think we could say that America's having something to do with the instability in Sudan. And certainly we know it is with Iraq and Syria and Afghanistan and other countries named. Iran's becoming unstable under the horrible sanctions we did. So here we have our country creating instability and difficulty in other countries, and then we turn our backs on the people that suffer from that. Even the people that side with the United States in those wars and conflicts. You know, I can remember after the Vietnam War, so many Vietnamese people coming into the country, and there was controversy then because you know, people who were already poor in this country, black and brown and red people, weren't always so happy to bring in people, strangers, who we had been fighting a war against, you know, and who were given services immediately. Yet, you know, at the time I did support that, and I would again, because, you know, we're responsible for those people. We created the circumstances in which they found themselves needing to become refugees, and we owe them something. We, of course, owe our own citizens much more than they get. So pick up your phone, dial us right now, 503-231-8187. If you make me talk the whole time, I'll make John, our wonderful engineer, put on music for you. He might be able to find some great refugee music like Deporté by Joan Baez or other songs like that. So if you'd rather listen to Deporté music, I'll be happy to get it for you. And I still have some more facts that I can give to you here, but I'd like to hear from you, the audience. Has the subject of immigrants and refugees dropped off the radar enough that you're not calling in? Or are you really in despair about this whole issue, and what can we do, and how can we be the good kind of citizens we want to be? I know yesterday on KBOO here in Portland, there was a show called Radio Activists, and it said that they wanted to do, this radio activist group was all about doing positive things, and I thought, well, that's nice, but what do they mean? And then it turned out they meant some pretty cool things. One of the things they're doing is putting together backpacks full of supplies to the young people on the Mexican border who need school supplies. And so they have put up a bundle of those and are finding ways to take those down and distribute those and make a difference with people who are trying to be immigrants here. So that's one of the kinds of things people are doing. And I do believe we have someone on the phone. It is Robbie. Good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Thank you for calling in.
Yes, I had some comments. I just wanted to, I think one thing that the Make America Cruel Again, one thing that's kind of wrong about it, is it's not really making America cruel again. I think it's like that's kind of the situation that I think is going on with Donald Trump, is he's kind of made everybody forget just how racist America was prior.
Yeah. Like, actually, the title is crueler, but I agree with you. I just couldn't say it well.
Crueler. I guess that is, I guess I stand corrected. That is,
I know I let that R drop just because it's hard to say, but yes, I hear what you're saying. This isn't new. These are new limits. They're extensions. They're carrying it further.
Right. And that's the thing, is like the Democrats haven't really passed any immigration reform. There was the DACA. There's the Dreamers. Right. That was about it, though. And that's for students.
And there's a new deadline for that in just about a month, I think. There's going to be a deadline where a lot of DACA recipients may not get renewed. And if I was a DACA student, and I don't mean to create fear out there, but I would worry because they know where you are. And if you're not covered, then you're not covered.
Yeah. Well, and that will bring me to my next point. I help book events for a fundraiser. These weren't my ideas, but there's been, if anybody's interested, there's a Instagram and a Facebook called Bonds Over Borders.
Bond, B-O-N-D, Over Borders?
Correct, Bonds. Uh-huh. Like bail bonds. And basically what we've done is we started booking shows and we, you know, comedy shows, we get music acts, we get comedians that are down for the cause, and then we raise money for Pueblo Unido, which I'd like to direct some people, if there is anybody listening, Pueblo Unido is a great organization here. They are literally providing sometimes bonds, but mostly just any form of attorney assistance. They cover the legal fees for migrants, and they post bail for them, so they get them out, and then they get them legal representation, which is critical in their fight for becoming a
I'm not thinking of his name, but the young man who is the head of Pueblo Unido on for an interview. And it's a very good organization, very committed organization, and working hard to make sure that there are not immigrants locked in locally here who have no legal support to have their issues heard. So these the Bond Over Borders is booking shows that raise money for Pueblo Unidos. Is there a site or something I can direct people to?
So there's only a Facebook and an Instagram currently. We're going to be doing more, but it is Bonds Over Borders. If you do a Facebook search or an Instagram search, you'll see Bonds Over Borders, and you'll see our last event. And the first event that we did, we just started it in September. And the first event that we did, we worked with Innovation Law Lab, which is another great organization. Innovation Law Lab is incredible. If you look up tech companies help migrants at the border, or it's something like that. Like there was a really wonderful Wired article. It's on, you know, Wired, the publication.
Right.
They did this wonderful piece on Innovation Law Lab, which we were able to raise like about $3,000 for. What they do is they're a bunch of techies, and what they did is they created same type of support network for the attorneys. And what they were doing is they and I'm summarizing this, you know, sure they do a lot more. I think they have two lawsuits against the current administration as well. But one of the things that they did is they started accessing, they created a database, like a database through a cloud network, right? Where what was common, and this is the story that they say, is like there a lot of the people that they were helping, when they would get detained or if they try to claim asylum, when they would get detained, all their papers, their identification paperwork, all that would get thrown away. And then when they would get, you know, released, they wouldn't have it. And this became such a common practice with, you know, and it was, they brought it with them. And so basically Innovation Law Lab, which was doing this fight, created a cloud server, which was able to access, I'm pretty sure from different, you know, whatever country they're from, it's creating this database where their attorney can access their credentials via this cloud. So anytime they're like, oh, you know, you don't have your identification anymore, well, their attorney does. And this was really critical in giving them the ability to you know, proceed with whatever hearing. So anyway,
well, you know, Robbie, they also, one of the other things I wanted to mention that Innovation Law Lab did was when there were Punjabi men out at the Sherman, Oregon prison, the federal prison,
right
there,
yes, they
went in and they helped get all of the, there were 120, I think, held there illegally to hold them in the federal prison. And they worked with all of them and got all of them free. But they also specifically, the Punjabi community came around and they assisted the community in assisting the people there with their traditions and their work and getting out once they got out with their moving forward. I know that they've also been, or I've been told that they've also been down on the southern border where there have been a large number of refugees from India, and also use that expertise to specifically help those down there. I haven't heard about the results of that, but that's, they do very good work in innovative ways, I think is the point.
Yes.
Yeah.
They were actually with the caravan, and what they were doing is that they were telling them, they were like, okay, this is what's going to happen. You know, they were preparing them for when they tried to claim asylum.
Yeah.
And just the work that they were doing was incredible. But, you know, it really is amazing. And I'm glad that you know about them, too, because a lot more people should be helping out.
Yeah, they're a little hard to get on for an interview. I'll just say that if they hear this. I interviewed one of the a Sikh woman who was helping them, but I wasn't able to get Innovation Law Lab on themselves. Well, Robbie, I want to thank you very much for what you've been bringing up, and we have another caller on the line, unless there's one more point you wanted to make. Keep an eye out for the Bond Over Borders events, for sure. And please do co-sponsor those with KBOO if you get a chance. Just call in and we can walk you through that.
Oh, we do every time, actually.
Good. Yeah.
Both of them have been on KBOO. But good. No, I really appreciate you taking my call, and I'll have a great day.
Yeah, you too. Thank you. And Bye. We have another caller, I believe, on the line. It is Karen. Hi.
Oh, hi,
Good
Linda.
Morning.
Thank you for taking this issue on.
You're welcome.
I just wanted to mention a few things. Innovation Law Labs is very good. They were not the only people involved in getting people out of Sheridan. One of the lawyers from a Quaker congregation I go to was able to get a Cameroonian refugee out, and he now has asylum. And there is also something called Immigration Counseling Services in Hood River. People can Google it if they want to give money to an immigrant counseling service. It's really good, as well as Innovation Law Labs. And one of the lawyers there, the head lawyer, is a member of my congregation, my Quaker congregation as well. And I think that congregations can do a lot, and groups of people can do a lot, whether it's a religious congregation or not. One person from the congregation went down to the border with a whole lot of supplies. Another person, another lawyer from the congregation, down to scope things out. We've had a lot of support for the refugee that we did get asylum for, and he's needed everything, you know, from housing to legal support to emotional support to food, everything, food, clothing, shelter. He had nothing.
Yeah. Often when they come out of detention, if they've been in detention for any length of time, they're very traumatized from the experience of detention as well.
I know there were
people who thought they would end up killing themselves if they had to stay where they were when they were in the Sherman. Sherwin? Anyway.
And the person that we got out is a person from Cameroon where there's a genocide, who lost his father and his brother. They were both murdered, and his sister and mother are hidden in another African country. So, trauma is a huge issue, and all this requires people power, money, constant attention to help with support issues. Medical care, that's a whole other thing. So, yeah, but people can do a lot. Do small things with great love, as Mother Teresa said. So I encourage people to find ways to contribute to this cause. I 100 million% agree with you that we have contributed to many of the conditions that are forcing people to seek refuge, including environmental devastation. And I did manage with a lawyer at our congregation also to get a woman who had a green card that was running out. We got her citizenship. She got the citizenship. I mean, we just set up the legal framework for her. So if people really want to do something, they can find really good lawyers to help. And I know right now the doors have been slammed shut in horrible ways, but we have an awful lot of people, and I think you already mentioned this, who are already here who need support. And we also are going to have our own internal refugees from climate change. I met a woman at a grocery store the other day who's really an environmental refugee. You have a great day.
Thank you very much, Karen. I appreciate the information you brought. And I do think it's really important. You know, you said the Quaker Church. I know that the woman that I interviewed was a Sikh woman, and it was her congregation or grouping that also provided a lot of support for the Punjabi men. And, you know, typically, historically, churches can go one way or another. They can also be very against certain people. It's so great if you know a church, support a church that helps refugees. I believe we do have another caller on the line. Harry, thanks for calling.
Oh, thank you for taking my call. What has happened in the last 20 years is they turned the word refugee into a dirty word. Before you said the word refugee, you had compassion for these people who are running and fleeing from something. What's going on in the Middle East? Well, a lot of them are fleeing to Europe, and they were nice enough to help some of these refugees, but we were known to help refugees here in this country, and we haven't. And a lot of them have been targeted, who weren't citizens, including students and everything else. And they rounded up 10,000. The idea that our country can target a certain refugee from a certain country, and I remember the news reports at the time, they would round up these Syrians who were, some of them had green cards, some of them were students or whatever, and some of them were sent to Houston. After they were interrogated, they released them on the streets of Houston. And it says, wait a minute, I came from Los Angeles. Aren't you going to fly me back? And they said, no. And so it was very terrible how they treated the Syrians. And when you mentioned there how many Syrians are coming to this country, we know there's a civil war. When it ends, they probably will go back, you know. So the idea is compassion. We have to have compassion for these people, and we don't. And Trump has made it okay to vilify refugees and immigrants, and I think it's a terrible thing that's going on. And
one of the things that I'm concerned about particularly is this town by town, state by state, able to deny refugees to live there. I think that that will be an area, if that part goes through, that will be an area in which many of us will be called on to stand against that. Now, I think we have a state that could countermand that, make its own laws, and I do want to suggest that you be in touch with your state legislature, your representatives, and your state senator. They're easy to find when you go to oregon.gov on the web. And be in touch with them. Say you want them to be preparing to deal with this bill in a way that says we will not allow any refugee to be turned away who's legally here. And so we won't allow any, we won't have a state ban on refugees, and we won't have any city or municipality in Oregon do it. I think that's going to be very important. We're going to have ways that we're going to need to step out and help in new ways, I guess, to say, because they're changing these things continuously, and they're making them so difficult for people to know about, you know, to understand the differences between, yes, you could apply for this and it wouldn't hurt you, no, you can't apply for that and it would hurt you. Well, thank you very much.
One last thing. Mm-hmm. Hopefully, your closing song. There was a song called in the 80s called Refugee. I mm-hmm. can't think of his name. He died a couple years ago. He was a famous musician. He treated like a refugee. That's the only thing I can remember. Hopefully, you can find it and play it.
I'll see if our engineer can. He gets busy answering our phone and keeping our voice sounding well. But if he gets a chance to look up refugee and play it on our way out, he will.
Thank you very much for answering my question.
Oh, well, I'm glad that you came on. And like I said, pay attention. We're always happy that Oregon is one of these in the lawsuit. But when these things start coming into effect, do we notice it? Like, I don't know if we as an area have paid attention to what has happened to our immigrant organizations because of this. I hope to do more reporting on that as we go forward and give you some information in the next months about what's actually happening with the immigrant organizations in the Portland area. I believe we do have another caller on the line. Sean, good morning.
Good morning. I think he's talking about Tom Petty, not my cup of tea, but I'm pretty sure the artist he's...
Tom Petty? Was it a good song?
Tom Petty's just not my cup of tea.
His type of music, but he wrote a good song called Refugee.
I think so.
We're going to call it good if this other guy liked it. We're going to assume that it is. Doesn't mean you like the taste of music, but we like the subject.
There you go.
I wanted to
tell a quick story and then ask a quick question. So I think it was late. It was like early fall of 2015. I had a half brother that I hadn't seen in many years come and visit me from the Chicago area. And his whole adult life, he's worked in construction. He's been a roofer, a union roofer. and we sat down in a pizza place, and over dinner, I told him how I was getting excited about how it looked like a possibility that, you know, a Democratic socialist, Bernie Sanders, could possibly become the candidate for the Democratic Party. And to my sort of horror and surprise, my half-brother was excited about the possibility of Trump winning the Republican nomination. And I started talking to him about it, and he said that as a unionized roofer, his last roofing job, he made like $35 an hour. Mm-hmm. And he said that was all going away. He said now a lot of times, not only is it non-union labor, it's under the table labor. You know, so like it's in construction and
sure.
I think it's always been that way. On and on and on.
It's been under the table since I was first eligible to work.
Well, not in heavily unionized.
Maybe not. Maybe not in good area. Yeah, but I've known people paid under the table.
In the Chicago area, union construction is a very serious thing.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying about that.
So, as leftists, we understand that capitalism's insatiable demand for higher profits. That's what's responsible for the troubles that people are facing, right? That's empirically true. There's no refuting that it's capitalism is the source of this issue. But as I tried to lay that out for my half brother, it felt very much like I was invalidating his pain and his victim status, and like I couldn't help but feeling like I was seeming aloof
from
and,
what
like,
he was actually suffering.
He was experiencing anecdotally, he was seeing, you know, people come into his life and, from his perception, take his job on an anecdotal basis. Granted, empirically, we understand it's capitalism. But what do you say to people who
have
those anecdotes about, hey, my life is being destroyed and you seem really insensitive to my pain?
Well, I want to ask
pain,
him.
My pain is invalid. And you seem to think that the pain of other people is valid.
I would ask him, what's Trump's policies on unions? Because I can promise you Trump doesn't like unions.
I can promise you
that Trump would do everything to destroy unions. And who has been destroying unions all these years and weakening them? Has that been the immigrant, or has that been the very government that he's wanting to defend?
I'm sure I probably went into the whole history of the
Reagan era. Yeah, because I just think that's really important. Right now, he's not being protected by anyone, and I understand
as a union worker.
Yeah, as a union. Well, look at the union workers here in town. They just got their union deal, and what, they're going to get something new? People going to get something barely over minimum?
You're not telling me anything I don't know. I'm sure I went into a lecture about Ronald Reagan and the air traffic controllers.
So none of that helped him?
What I'm saying is that came across as invalidating the anecdotal experience of my half-brother. What do you do when you come across that situation?
Well, I was going to say my only way to come across it was try to have him find that he really, that he's in a situation that's bad. So is that immigrant. Can they reach out and make, I would like to unionize all the immigrants with it so that we didn't have this division that the owners, the people who are running the businesses, use to undercut the unions. Unions are being undercut by the businesses. They're not being undercut by the bodies that come there. We need to get those bodies unionized. And I think when we decide to reach out as union members to refugees and immigrants and say, you know, we want you to be part of us, we don't want you to be separated and making less than us, that might make a difference. They're always going to try to divide us. Thanks, though, for the call. And I do believe we have another caller on the line. No calls on the line right now. I want to thank all of you who have called and invite more of you, too. There's so much more to talk about this issue. The number to call is 503-231-8187. I'm talking, and my name is Linda Olson Osterlund. I'm one of the hosts here at KBOO and happy to be hosting Voices from the Edge today. And we're talking based on an article from TomDispatch.com. It's an article written by a man named Arnold Isaacs, and it's MACA, or Making America Crueler Again. The White House targets refugees, green card applicants, and poor immigrants. And we're bringing up the additional changes, the continuing changes that the Trump administration brings up to divide issues. I want to bring up the upcoming election and how these particular initiatives may have been aimed at stoking the xenophobia during the elections and keeping all eyes on upset around nationalism. When you look forward towards the 2020 elections and you have a new rule that says any town or city can deny refugees the right to live there, and they actually require that the organizations that settle refugees for the United States get written answer from the entity where they want to resettle someone. So if they want to resettle someone in Oregon, Oregon needs to send a letter. The Office of Refugee Resettlement needs to send a letter to Oregon State attorney and ask them for permission for that refugee to be able to come. Well, couple things really. And then if they do allow that person to come, they must publish that publicly so that everybody knows that we accepted a refugee and where exactly, like they're being, you know, allowed to live in Tigard or Gresham. And so they're setting up a whole bunch of things that are really problematic there. One, there has to be a bureaucracy between the government and, you know, between all these different entities around the nation to be able to answer that letter from the Office of Refugees to say yes or no, they cannot stop there. And it'll depend on the things. And they're hoping, they believe that the Republicans are hoping that this will cause a lot of xenophobic outbreaks. Like, say, isn't this a Proud Boys happy day if they get the announcement that new refugees from Muslim countries have been settled, and then they want to go to the organization that settled them or to the city that they settled them to cause trouble? The idea is that it looks like the Trump administration is hoping to use this to raise up greater and greater xenophobic fervor, so that even if it's just a small number of people, like the Proud Boys are, we know that, but look what damage they've already caused coming through this city, you know, damaging small businesses that have people they deem anarchists, attacking people physically, costing us, you know, bazillions, you know, I don't know how much I'm exaggerating, obviously, bazillions of dollars in policing them. If this rolls out nationwide and every city and every state and every county is in a position to have to announce if they've accepted a refugee, that's going to set up a lot of those people who, they don't care that they're the minority. They don't care that they're less than 10% of the society out there. They'll use that to have those horrible demonstrations. They'll use that to target refugees. It certainly is a way of frightening refugees. So call in and tell me what you think about this, a town by town, a new refugee ban that can be done town by town. State or local governments have the right to block the resettlement of newly admitted refugees to their, quote, territory. I never like to think of us as having, I guess we have city limits, but, you know, territory. I think of that as like putting it along with homeland, all of these nationalist phrases to make us feel like there's something we're having to hang on to against others. So call in and tell us what you think about that, because that may be coming to you soon. There are injunctions against it, but so far in that long run, Trump has been able to push forward his anti-Muslim ban, his anti-refugee behavior and actions with very little stopping it. We have the horrors that are taking place on our southern border to families and children. We've not been able to stop those. What are we going to do to stop those? And certainly a lot of us hope that the 2020 election will do that. I never count on that. Obama, I don't know how much he would take back of what Trump has now done. I'm sure he would take back some, but, you know, we cannot count on the Democrats necessarily to take back what is getting made law and made practice at this time. And so I think it's especially crucial that we know about what's happening and that we do what we can. Maybe it's just reaching out a, you know, a welcome hand to a new neighbor who you think might be a refugee. When I was a kid, I moved to small towns and we always had what was called the welcome wagon who would come by. Now, sometimes that was some couple people with some boxes full of all sorts of wonderful things to welcome us to the community, food and coupons for stores and just all sorts of things. Other times it was just, you know, one neighbor with a small basket full of things. But there was that tradition of welcoming your neighbors. And maybe we could, you know, this this Bond Over Borders organization. What a great idea. What a great way, getting musicians and artists together to book a show where the money will go to Pueblo Unido, which will allow it to, you know, to help legally immigrants here who are in legal jeopardy of leaving the country or need legal advice. That's a great inventive way of doing that. And we need a whole bunch more of those. So call in with your ideas of how we can fight this kind of move that goes on. Obviously, we're not being able to fight what number of immigrants come into the country. Right now, we're not effectively stopping the ban. The ban's effectively banning people. And that means very real suffering. A lot of those people banned have family here, had part of their education planned here, you know, had all sorts of different reasons for coming to this country that we would think perfectly valid, and now they will not be allowed to. Do you want only wealthy people to come to the United States? How do you feel like that? Do you want more Melanias? I don't know her enough to dislike her, but I don't think that we really only want white wealthy people coming to our country. I'd like you to answer that question as well. Does it make a difference to you whether it's poor people or wealthy people or people seeking education when they come to our country? The number to call is 503-231-8187. We've had some great calls this morning. I'd like to hear from the rest of you. You've got a good 10 minutes to go, so we definitely have time to hear from you. Oh, and I'm going to give you a few more facts, but after that, we might go to a song just for the heck of it. I wanted to say also that the damage that's being done here locally in the United States, this kind of ban greatly empowers the rightist nationalists, organizations and parties around the world who are fighting to not allow refugees to come across their borders, refugees from war, refugees from climate change. When we look forward at what's happening with our climate, and we know that millions and millions of us, and that's no exaggeration, are going to be having to move and having to move in rapid form sometimes, like say when their aquifer is completely gone and there's no water to a region of India. So we're talking about a world where we're going to have more and more migration by humans. And we're making it worse for them everywhere because our right wing, our fascist president is signaling all the rest of them that the United States no longer stands with the refugee, that the United States no longer stands with the United Nations and humanitarian law that says we're obligated to offer a helping hand, that you don't turn a back on your refugee drowning in the water outside your country, that you don't turn a back on the refugees starving in the country he's coming from. Well, obviously, we turn our back on all of that at this time now in the United States, and we're often seen as the leader, or at least we were seen as the deterrent. You know, we would put some muscle and some money behind helping refugees. That's not so anymore. And what does that do to the whole world? And what does that mean for you and me? When 1968, when the Vietnam War was still going strong and I was a young woman in college, I can remember the agony I felt about how could I stop that war? You know, at that time, we got to see these things on TV. Now we just get to see phony baloney shows about SEALs and other people conquering the bad Arab. But in those days, we actually got to see the scenes of the war on our TV every night and on the cover of our magazines. And we felt very deeply the pain of the people that we were killing. I think that we should make ourselves feel very deeply about the pain of the people that we're killing right now, and that the effect of our government having this policy on the world. You know, many of you will be using the 2020 election to try to change that. And I think go for it, go hard for it. I do think, however, it's not going to be enough. We need to right now be making the changes we want to see. We need to be the state that does allow refugees in and refuse. Maybe we should say we refuse to publicly announce where they're going. We need to fight back on these things and not allow the right to keep grabbing the headlines and grabbing our way of handling things. I did hear a show yesterday on KBOO, I believe it was. I was listening to it on KBOO, and they were talking about. They were talking about how different organizations help immigrants and others that are being stopped from it. I'm not remembering the particular thing that I was thinking of, but I know that it had to do with reaching out to individual families and finding ways to get out to the families to speak to them so that they're not so frightened of using the services they still have. There are services that are still available. They're just not the cash services. And most of the organizations working with refugees are saying, please go ahead and continue to take the services that you are entitled to. You are entitled to them, and they should not cost you, cause any problem for you. The Church World Service is a religious one, and a group of 9 national resettlement ones. They include the Church World Service, the HIAS, LERS, the World Relief, and 4 of the 9 national resettlement agencies, and 6 of the 9 are faith-based. And so if you're one of those people that has a church you relate to, has a faith-based organization you relate to, why not make it one of the most important missions of your church to help refugees this year right here in your own area? Take up an action, do something, find refugees in your neighborhood who might need help. Go to some place like IRCO and ask them, how can you help refugees who have come to this country? How can you make settling in easier for them? I think all of that is really, really important to do. We're going to go to a song now. It's about refugees, and it's Arlo Guthrie, Deportee. When we get back, we'll have one more time for a question.
The crops are all in, the beaches are rotting, the oranges are piled in their creosote dump. They're flying you back to the Mexico border to pay all your money to wait back again. My father's own father, he waded that river. They took all the money he made in his life. My brothers and sisters come working the fruit trees. They rode the trucks till they took down and died. Goodbye to my one, goodbye Rosalita. Adios, mi amigos, Jesus y Maria. You won't have a name when you ride the big airplane, and all they will call you will be deportees. Some of us are illegal, and others not wanted. Our work contract's out, and we have to move on. 600 miles to the Mexico border, they chase us like outlaws, like rustlers and thieves. We died in your hills, and we died on your deserts. We died in your valleys, we died on your plains. We died in your trees, and we died in your bushes. Both sides of the river, we've died just the same.
You've been listening to Arlo Guthrie sing Deportee, and I'm Linda Olson Osterlin with Boise. I was going to say where I used to work with KBOO Community Radio, and we've been talking about the new motions that have been put out by the Trump administration to limit the services and the ability of people to come here who are poor or who have any need for any kind of public service like medical needs. One of the things that we've often been most proud of is bringing people from other countries and using our medical services to take care of them, do surgeries that couldn't be done. I don't know if they would even be allowed to come now, because you can't come if you need those kind of services, or you can come if you're wealthy and you have insurance. You cannot come if you don't have medical insurance when you're trying to immigrate to the United States anymore. That's kind of crazy, because I don't know the medical insurance that covers you both sides of international borders anyway, and you're going to be forced to be able to prove that you can purchase your own medical care while you're here. Think about these kinds of rules and think about what you want to do about them, because they're coming our way, and we get to make choices about it. Here in Oregon, we've joined a lawsuit to stop it, but I think there's going to be much more we're going to be able to do as we go forward. Oregon did great this last legislative session. We voted to give driver's licenses to people who are undocumented in the state, and that makes a huge difference. Let's keep making huge differences all over Oregon. I want to thank you all for tuning in and listening to KBOO. I want to thank John Shuck for being our engineer and forwarding your voices to us and getting that music for us. And just thanks to all KBOO listeners for being the listeners who care about the issues that we care to bring you. Thank you again.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right.
KBOO, Portland, it's 9 o'clock, and Press Watch is coming up next. At 10 o'clock, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. At 11, Between the Covers. And at 11:30, it's Words and Pictures. New Yorker cartoonist Emily Flake shares her singular takes on politics, parenting, and pop culture with your host, S.W. Konser. All of these KBOO programs are made possible by member support. If you'd like to become a member, go to kboo.fm and click on Donate.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Native Artist and Storyteller Symposium on Saturday, October 26th from noon to 6 p.m. at the PSU Native American Student and Community Center in Portland. The Native Artist and Storyteller Symposium will feature artist talks and presentations by Native artists, a panel discussion, a community meal, an artist marketplace, and more. Again, that's the Native Artist and Storyteller Symposium on Saturday, October 26th from noon to 6 p.m. at the PSU Native American Student and Community Center, 710 Southwest Jackson Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.